All right. When we come back, we're going to get into a very fascinating discussion, political subterfuge, and the like. You'll want to stay tuned for that. Sunday nights at 11 p.m., you can listen to my weekly syndicated radio program out of Toronto called The Conspiracy Show. It's available on Zoomer Radio, 50,000-watt clear channel, and it can be heard along much of the Eastern Seaboard. Or you can catch me on one of my affiliates, and the website is strangeplanet.ca, strangeplanet.ca. And incidentally, my TV show, also called The Conspiracy Show, available in the U.S. on Hulu, Amazon.com, the first three seasons. Season four of The Conspiracy Show will debut across Canada on Vision TV Monday, June the 27th at 9 p.m. Eastern. All right, as I mentioned, you're about to meet Alon Gibby, the official biographer for Ambassador Lee Wanta, the man who may be responsible for ending the Cold War, ending the threat of nuclear annihilation. Lee Wanta was President Ronald Reagan's secret agent, who was tasked with bringing the Soviet Union to its knees through a series of currency swaps, which brought about the collapse of the ruble. And Wanta's financial dealings netted tens of trillions of dollars. And President Reagan, it was his desire that this money be brought back to the United States, repatriated, in order to benefit all Americans. So, where is it? Where is this money? You're about to find out. Lon Gibby in the next hour, and then the $31.2 trillion man himself, Ambassador Lee Wanta, in hour three. And then your calls, questions, and comments for both Lon and Ambassador Wanta in hour four. This is Coast to Coast AM. Don't go anywhere. This is going to get good. Lon Gibby is the president of Gibby Media Group, Inc., a full-service multimedia and advertising company with decades of experience. Since 1983, GMG has produced more than 4,000 videos, ranging from television commercials to training videos, feature-length documentaries to corporate videos, and just about everything in between. Gibby's latest film is the documentary Eagle One to Wanta, which chronicles President Reagan's secret agent, Ambassador Lee Emil Wanta, who helped mastermind a creative way to financially take down the economy of the Soviet Union and negotiate an agreement with Secretary General Mikhail Gorbachev. Lon Gibby, welcome to Coast to Coast AM. How are you?
Great, Richard. Awesome to be with you tonight.
All right, let's begin. We should mention that you're going to be bringing Ambassador Lee Wanta onto the program through your phone system. Such is sort of the secretive nature of his whereabouts and so forth that we can't call him, but he'll be calling into you, and then you'll basically put him on the air. Is that right?
That's correct. You bet. In the second hour, we're gonna
All
do
right.
that.
Now, let's begin because Ambassador Wanta was on this program. With me, I'm trying to remember when that was. I believe it was 2014.
It was, I think, April, the end of April of 2014.
All right. Thank you for that.
You bet.
So for those who missed that program, let's just get a very a general sort of overview of this story. Ambassador Wanta sitting on $31.2 trillion, and just give us the broad brush strokes, if you will.
You bet. Well, first of all, Lee is a secret agent working under President Ronald Reagan, and he wasn't considered a spy, and he wasn't considered an employee of the U.S. government. He was taken on by President Reagan as a secret agent under what was called the Totem Doctrine, which was established by President Abraham Lincoln. So that a private citizen can be employed or put in service to go behind enemy lines and work with the enemy. And so the Totem Doctrine has only been used twice in our history, Richard. And Lee Wanta was the second time used under President Reagan. So Lee had the responsibility of working directly under the president and was authorized to do some of the work that we'll be talking about tonight and what he accomplished.
And in terms of the timing, the timeline, this was during President Reagan's first term, somewhere between 80 and 84?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, well, actually, it was took place towards 1988, up in that time period, all throughout that period of time.
And who was...
Because his work was started, you know, during perestroika, during that period of time when the Soviet Union was starting to change. And then he worked, he's still at work. That's what we're going to talk about tonight. It's interesting, Lee is still working under the original mandate that he was given by President Reagan. And that mandate is what he is honoring to this day.
So the idea here was, again, just a rough overview. Reagan and his advisors, maybe his national security team, the CIA director, they concocted this idea that the best way to end the Cold War was to ruin the Soviet Union financially. It certainly was well on its way anyway, some might argue. But to cause a collapse of the Russian ruble through some financial wheeling, dealing, currency swaps, and so forth. And that's why they recruited Lee Wanta. Is that right?
That's correct. You know, they needed some, President Reagan needed somebody that he could trust that was brilliant, somebody that had a photographic memory, somebody that could, and Lee has many talents that he had shown, demonstrated, you know, prior to being selected to work on this basis. And so he was put in a position where he, you know, was given a lots of authority and also lots of responsibility and trust to do what he did. And I've in my entire career, you know, working on any project, I've never come across a story quite like this one. It's I've read a lot of James Bond movies and books and enjoyed that series, but here's an actual James Bond in our own time, and so you'll enjoy hearing more of how he did his work and how he's still working on the project as we speak today.
Lon Gibby is with us on Coast to Coast AM, and I should point out the biography, Lee Wanta's biography, Wanta, Black Swan, White Hat, and Lon, you wrote the foreword to the book, and I should also point out a documentary film soon to be released called Eagle One to Wanta. Eagle One to Wanta, and the Eagle One refers to what?
Well, Eagle One was a code word for President Reagan, and the president was called Eagle One. And of course, his communication with Lee, so we came up with that name for the documentary. And by the way, there's a website, eagle1towanta.com. It's just the way it's spelled, eagle1, spelled out, towanta.com. But there is a 10-minute preview of the documentary available to anybody who'd like to see that. And it'll give you kind of an idea of what the final format's going to be and what we're trying to complete here in the next few months.
And we should also point out that Ambassador Lee Wanta's nickname over the years has become the $27 trillion man, although I see on the back cover of the book, that's been upped to the $31.2 trillion man. Is that just because of compound interest, or
well,
what is that?
Yeah, partially that, you know, the interest is a lot more than that, actually, but that's the amount that they've settled on at this point, that is $31.2 trillion. And I should point out that Lee's, you know, a good percentage of that money, 35%, belongs to us as taxpayers, because we, when he pays his tax, when he repatriates that money, he will be paying, you know, 35% interest, or 35% in repatriation taxes on that. So, and then the rest is considered his private funds, which he wants to use to build a high-speed rail system for our country and do a number of other major projects that he's been planning for quite for some time now.
All right. A reminder, Ambassador Lee Wanta will join us from Parts Unknown on this program in the next hour. And then in the final hour, Lon Gibby will stay with us, as well as Ambassador Wanta, and we'll open up the phone lines and we'll take questions and questions and comments from you, the listener. Now, just a real quick biography of Ambassador Wanta. Who was he before he became Reagan's secret agent? In other words, what was it about Wanta's background that attracted the attention of the 40th President of the United States?
Well, that's a really good question. You know, going back in his history, he from the time he was a young, very young man, he demonstrated a tremendous ability to memorize things. He could memorize numbers. He could look at something and recall it back. And even to this day, here he is at 76. It's just amazing because I get the honor to get to speak with Lee on a regular basis. And it's incredible to me how he could remember every detail, even things that what he saw in the room when he just was in there for a moment. Or he remembers specifically what he ate on a specific day. But anyway, that was an important element to do the kind of work that he had to do, that he had the ability to remember exactly what he saw and exactly what he heard. But even more important than that was that he demonstrated early in his life to be someone that has integrity, somebody that was honest and trustworthy. And that's really what President Reagan needed, because he had a lot of issues going on with people that had other hidden agendas within government at that time, and still has. People still have many different agendas that were different than President Reagan's. And he really needed somebody that he could depend on and had tenacity to accomplish that. And so Lee, as a young man, demonstrated that. He worked hard. Growing up, he became a deputy sheriff. He lived in the state of Wisconsin. He took the Dale Carnegie course, which he talks about all the time, how important that was, for helping him. And a Senator Wiley in Wisconsin helped him be able to go through, because he didn't have the money to attend that course. And there were the various people that helped him that were mentors for him. And he always talks about his Catholic upbringing with the nuns and how they work with him. But he has a tremendous sense of humor. It's amazing how because he can remember a lot of jokes and stories from the past. But he's very serious in his following through with what he was asked to do.
But was he groomed from a young age for a life in intelligence? How was it that he worked his way up to find himself, in the Oval Office and becoming charged with this incredible mission to bring down the Soviet Union?
Well, they recognized he had those talents that I mentioned before, but I think he got exposed to some pretty well-known people right from a very young age. He worked as a union member in the automotive industry for a while, and his dad was involved in the unions in Wisconsin, in that area. But he demonstrated as somebody right from the very beginning, somebody that was super talented. I mean, that could not only remember things and recant things that need to be done, but he was very somebody that was trusted right from the very beginning. So he excelled in anything he did, and he was introduced eventually to people and some of the politicians of that time period, and they were the ones that actually, I've seen some of the letters of some very well-known people in our government that had actually recommended him for some very high positions within the Reagan administration at the very beginning. So I'm not sure exactly. I mean, it's all the details of that, and you could ask Lee when he comes on if you want to know more about that. But he obviously was selected, or at least, you know, people realized that he had a great future in becoming somebody that could really help our country in this area.
And did he have a, I mean, he must have had and must have a tremendous business acumen in order to facilitate or concoct these elaborate financial schemes, which included something I know nothing about, and I'll get you later to explain it, and perhaps Ambassador wanted to explain how these currency swaps work, currency swaps that were enabled him to essentially bankrupt the Soviet Union, bring this, as Reagan called it, this evil empire to its knees, end the Cold War, and then go on to use that money to create further tens of trillions of dollars. I mean, he must have had or must have an incredible business mind.
Oh, he does. It's so brilliant that in currency, you can't sell currency. Basically, it's an exchange is what you're doing. Okay, it's illegal to sell a U.S. dollars. But in a currency exchange, you know, where you're exchanging, you know, buying something and exchanging something for something else. Lee is brilliant in that area, and he understands numbers, very mathematical, in his ability to understand, you know, when, and at the same time, he does have some people skills. I can tell you, he has a really good ability to communicate. So that made him very successful in the work that he was asked to do. You know, people that he would meet with trusted him, including many of the high-level people within the Soviet Union. And I wanted to say one thing about that. You got to differentiate between, you know, the Soviet Union and Russia, because, you know, according to Reagan believed the Soviet Union was the evil empire, and that's what Lee was involved in taking down. Not, he wasn't trying to take down the Russian people as a country. It was more getting rid of the Soviet Union, the evil empire.
Okay. Right. That is an important distinction. And I think if I recall correctly from Lee's last appearance, some of that money that was netted went back into what became the Federation of Russian States in the form of aid to help the Russian people. Is that right?
That's correct. You know, he actually was a signer on the General Agreement of Cooperation, which was really the agreement that started the Russian Federation. And, you know, the beautiful thing about the Russian Federation starting up as a new country was, well, they were a fledgling democratic country, but all the money in the industrial military complex that we had to fund to build up our military and to beat them the way we did, you know, we were able to funnel that money into more, you know, social programs and other things. And
all right, Lon, I gotta jump in here. We're gonna take a time out. Lon Gibby is with us, president of Gibby Media Group. The book is Wanta, Black Swan, White Hat, and we'll meet that man coming up in the next hour. We can also look forward to the documentary film Eagle One to Wanta. Lon Gibby, Leo Wanta, upcoming on the program. Here is Canadian chanteuse Joni Mitchell and Chelsea Morning taking us into the break on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett. Richard, and I'll spell the last name, S as in Simon, Y because I love you, R-E-T-T, at Richard Serrett. We'll get back to our conversation with Lon Gibby about Ambassador Lee Wanta, Ronald Reagan's secret agent, in just a moment. Let me just remind you about Beyond Belief with George Norrie. Join Coast to Coast AM's George Norrie for dynamic discussions on paranormal phenomena, conspiracies, and all things unexplained. It's just like Coast to Coast, except with pictures. Next episode is Wednesday, June the 1st. That's just a few days away. It's called Small Town Monsters, featuring Seth Breedlove, and you'll discover the strange creatures from eyewitness accounts and amateur video which terrify small towns across the country. For more information and to register and begin watching episodes right now, just go to beyondbelief.com, beyondbelief.com. His authorized biography will shake the world and change history. President Reagan and his secret agent ambassador, Lee Emile Wanta, mastermind a creative way to financially take down the economy of the Soviet Union without firing a single shot. The $32.1 trillion US dollars he amassed in the process has finally been recovered and accounted for after it was hijacked by criminal non-government organizations known as the Federal Reserve and the corporate state of Wisconsin. We'll learn more when my conversation with Lon Gibby and later Leo Wanta himself continues right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. Lon Gibby stays with us. He's the president of Gibby Media Group. He wrote the foreword to Lee Wanta's biography, Wanta, Black Swan, White Hat, and he is the producer of the documentary film Eagle One to Wanta, which chronicles President Reagan's secret agent ambassador, Lee Emile Wanta, who helped mastermind a creative way to financially take down the economy of the Soviet Union and negotiate an agreement with Secretary General Mikhail Gorbachev. So, Lon, without getting overly technical and bogged down in a lot of technical terms, tell me how these currency swaps worked that Lee Wanta perpetrated on the Soviet Union to bring the ruble crashing down. How did these currency swaps work?
Well, real quickly, first of all, in order for him to be in that game, he had to have a substantial amount of money to be able to do the work that he did. So under the Totten Doctrine, working under President Reagan as a secret agent, as a private citizen, he was basically given a loan for $150 billion. And he took that money, and because of his brilliance in the way he was able to buy currency at a low price and then sell it, or not buy, but he would exchange it, you would get it at a lower rate and then move it that way. He was able to, he paid back that $150 billion, and we talk about it in the biography, but also in the documentary, but he paid that back in 6 months. And then, you know, as a result of that, he did some major transactions between all the different currencies that were relating to the ruble in different countries, and was able to, and he could tell you more of the mechanics of it, but I, you know, some of it, again, some of the things that he did is being used against us right now, because they learned a lot from Lee watching how he operated, and it could be used for good, but it also could be used for bad.
You're talking about currency wars.
Wars, kind of what we're experiencing as we, and will be experiencing more in the future.
So to summarize, he was given $150 billion in seed money and told, go out and get involved in some currency speculation.
Yep.
And doing this, he was able to cause the total devaluation of the Russian ruble.
Yeah, when by the time they got done, they could, you know, their military didn't even have the money, you know, to pay for the gasoline, for example, which is a little scary now because we've been hearing, you know, that some of our fuel for our needs has to be paid for with silver, and they're not accepting the U.S. dollar. So there were some strange things going on. What we're seeing today is kind of a little bit concerning. And we can talk more about that when he comes on. But anyway, the value of the rubles dropped so low that you literally had to have a wheelbarrow full of rubles to amount to anything than to buy anything. But he had taken the rubles that he'd exchanged, he did before it got to that level, and made quite a bit of profit on his exchanges. So by the time, as it turned out, his formula for doing that we describe in more detail. It's described in the biography pretty well, but in the documentary we'll explain it a lot more, exactly how he did it.
All right. And then he went on to, because I guess he went short on the ruble, made untold billions, and then he parlayed that into other ventures that didn't have anything necessarily to do with the Russian ruble. Later, he would start buying banks.
Yes, that's exactly right. He had many different corporations that operated, and of course, these were all well-known, you know, by President Reagan and the people that knew that he was using these companies the way he was. But he was very successful with those companies, and to the point that there was a bank in Greece that he purchased, and then what happened to him, and I'm sure you're going to ask me about what happened to him in Switzerland and also in Wisconsin, but all of his funds that he had amassed were basically, they call it converted, you know, they converted it, but really that's a term they use, but it's another way of saying stolen. His funds were basically stolen from him, and the book, of course, explains that exactly. It's an incredible story when you look at all the different things that happened and the kinds of people that you know in history that you would be surprised were involved in were involved in what happened to him.
Yeah. It is an incredible story, and we will talk about his what has been described as a false imprisonment. We'll talk about who was after him and why, and then we'll get into the Clintons and Vince Foster and as much as we can, as much as time allows. But let me ask you, I mean, you're running this multimedia and advertising company. You're making TV commercials and training videos. How do you get hooked up with a secret agent like Lee Wanta?
Well, that's an interesting question. Because of the work I do, you know, I've had an opportunity in my career. I've been in business since I got out of college. I've been in business 38 years. So I've been exposed to a lot of different types of businesses and organizations. And I was producing a document. I've done documentaries. Did one on Vietnam War called True Honor. I've worked on fighter pilots. And then I also finished one on mountain climbing called Wisdom Earned, which our partner climbed every major mountain in the world, Chris Kopczanski. And when we finished that, I had about that same time I was getting close to finishing that, I was introduced to a lady that was working with Lee, that was helping him with his biography, and she screened my materials, and eventually, and I talked to her probably for almost 2-3 months, and one day, I got a phone call, and it was Lee Wanta on the phone. And from then on, I pretty much talked to him on a daily basis. But it took a while for him to know that, you know, they checked us out, of course, and looked at our credentials and our, you know, what the kind of work we did. And he felt good enough. He felt comfortable enough to work with me. He felt like he could trust me. When I realized, you know, the content of this documentary, I was very taken back by it. I really love our country. I'm like a lot of Americans. They really love the Constitution. They love, you know, our history. When I started looking into this, I realized that history maybe was a little different. Some of the things that happened were told to me differently than they really were in history, because some of it had been kept from us. But I felt like the story, I got behind the story. I felt like it needed to be told to the American people, and so that's why I decided to help, jump into it. And I've never had a project quite like this one, because it's so, you know, you think of Watergate and what that was like, and the cover-up was worse, you know, than the crime. This is like 1,000 Watergates, if you want to know the truth. And when you read the biography, and you read it, Richard, and you've got a copy of it, right? Or you're starting to read it.
Indeed, I do. Well, you're now affiliated with this individual who is sitting on $31.2 trillion. And there are people lined up not only to get that money, but to get Lee Wanta. We're not going to disclose his location. He's going to join us a little bit later. But have you ever felt your safety was in jeopardy just because of your association with Ambassador Lee Wanta.
Well, I think anybody that's been worked on any of his projects feels that way. But the more people know about it, and I've shared with some pretty well known people that I work with in my career. I've had the opportunity to work with some pretty high level folks over my time in this business. But the more people that know about it, the more, the better it is. And of course, the biography's been out for about a year now, and it's people have known about Lee's story a lot longer before that, because there was a version of the biography that had come out earlier. And so, I'm always worried about that, but you have to consider what's important in getting this message out to the future generations.
Okay, and again, let me just mention the name of the biography. It's called Wanta, Black Swan, White Hat, and the soon-to-be-released documentary is Eagle One to Wanta. So he amasses this huge fortune, $27 trillion, now with compound interest over $30 trillion, that was supposed to be repatriated. After Reagan leaves office, what happens to Lee Wanta? Is he still charged with his mission, or is he now operating sort of as a lone wolf? What's going on at that point? We're talking now the late 80s, early 90s.
Well, Lee will tell you that Reagan is the last duly elected president of the United States. In other words, the transition team that was involved in that entire group is still basically at work. And Lee is still at work, because there never was a proper transition to a duly elected president. What that means, we can spend a whole show on that, but it just basically means that some of the election ways things were done in the elections wasn't done properly. It means that some of the people may not have been weren't qualified or didn't have the right to. It shouldn't have been in that position. So Lee is still at work for President Reagan. And, President Reagan and H.W. George Bush, they did not get along very well. President Bush was over the CIA. And that's part of the problem, because Reagan was trying to get rid of the CIA, or at least structured into another type of a mission. Its mission had gotten kind of out of control, where it was doing some coup d'etats and setting up terrorist organizations and funding arms to some people that Reagan didn't feel that was proper. So anyway, there was a big friction between the two. And so when Reagan left office, even though you didn't hear much about him, he was still obviously hopeful that his plans would continue on, that his group that he had set up.
All right, we've just got about 4 minutes here, but let's begin this discussion, then we'll bring Ambassador Wanta onto the program, and we can pick up on some of these points. But let's talk about when Wanta is imprisoned. He's in Switzerland. He's supposed to have a meeting. Now, this is an interesting name that pops up in this story, because his name has resurfaced in the news now again during this presidential election cycle, and that would be Vince Foster, who, of course, worked with the Democratic presumptive nominee Hillary Clinton at her law firm in Arkansas, would join the Clintons in the Clinton White House in the early 90s. Wanta is in Switzerland, and he's supposed to be donating a huge chunk of change to the Clintons' Children Defense Fund, and he's supposed to hand that money off to Vince Foster.
Correct.
Okay.
And that's a very timely story. We're connecting the dots, basically, and a lot of people maybe very few people know this. But what happened is that Lee is a philanthropist, and the funds that he had, that he was asked to donate to the Children's Defense Fund, and he thought, well, that's probably, sounds like a a worthwhile organization to do that to. So he had agreed to do that. He was in Switzerland at the time. Vince Foster was sent by the White House to come to Switzerland to meet with Lee at a specific location at a hotel. Lee had the financial instruments made up. There were three financial instruments for that amount of money, $250 million. It was being couriered to the hotel. As Lee was traveling to the hotel, and he was with another gentleman who's a witness, by the way, that we've interviewed and talked to, that was part of that. He got arrested as well. But I'm not going to mention his name right now because, again, it's for protecting. But the point is that when he was on his way to the hotel to meet with Vince, he was arrested and put in a Swiss dungeon at that time. He even stayed there for 134 days. And all of his funds, he doesn't know what happened to his funds after that point, but it was delivered to Vince Foster. And Vince Foster went back to Washington, D.C., and 10 days later allegedly committed suicide. So, but where's the $250 million? That's the question.
Right, right.
Who's going to bow up for where that went? Okay.
And the charges, he was imprisoned on what charges? Did this have something to do with trumped up charges on tax evasion?
There were no charges. That's what's really bizarre about the whole thing. He was just basically all of his human rights were taken away. I mean, and all of his wealth, everything. He had $500 billion in a Swiss bank. And that's not been accounted for either, $500 billion that were there at the time. And they never explained why he was there. And his life, you'll read about in the book, they tried to murder him. A couple attempts were made at his life during that time, including some poison cheese that he didn't eat and gave to a prisoner in another cell that died that night.
How did he eventually get out of the Swiss prison?
Well, eventually he was released to go back to New York. And he is an ambassador, and a lot of people say, well, he's not an ambassador. He has actual ambassador passports and credentials. And anyway, he left from there to New York and on his credentials as an ambassador. When he arrived there, he had to see a judge there. Then the judge threw out, there were no charges for him. He walks out the door, he was released, walks out the door, and was immediately arrested by Wisconsin, state of Wisconsin.
All right, Lon, I'm going to pick it up on the other side with the man himself, Lee Wanta, the ambassador, Lee Wanta, the trillion-dollar man. And we'll come back with more of this amazing conversation right here on Coast to Coast AM.